You're listening to a podcast from the BBC World Service. This is Hard Talk with me, Stephen Sacker. Thanks for downloading this edition of the programme. I do hope you enjoy it.
Welcome to Hard Talk on the BBC World Service with me, Stephen Sacker. My guest today forged a reputation as a steady and capable finance minister in South Africa. Strange, then, that Pravin Gordhan was unceremoniously removed from office not once but twice by his political boss, President Jacob Zuma. Or maybe it's not so strange. Gordhan, it seems, was always a minister that Zuma had difficulties dealing with. He wasn't biddable, and that won him the confidence of the financial markets, but ultimately made him political enemies. And by the time he was forced out of the government last March, he was being accused of fraud by South Africa's Director of Public Prosecutions. Those allegations have never been tested in court and have always been described by Gordhan as a trumped-up conspiracy designed to stop him blowing the whistle on abuses and corruption inside government. In short, the former finance minister is now a fierce critic of his former boss, President Zuma, and he's called on the president to resign. That's unlikely to happen. Mr. Zuma recently survived a bruising no-confidence vote in the South African parliament. But how long can he go on? And how compromised is the ruling ANC by corruption and economic mismanagement? Well, Pravin Gordhan joins me now on the line from Johannesburg. Welcome to Hard Talk.
Thank you, Stephen, and thank you for having me, long distance as it might be.
Indeed it is. But let's consider what's happening in your country today, and in particular the fallout from that no-confidence motion against President Jacob Zuma, which of course didn't succeed, but it got 177 votes, which was significant because it clearly included a substantial number of ANC MPs. How toxic is the atmosphere inside the ANC as a result of that no-confidence vote?
Well, there certainly is an active debate and contestation of ideas. I mean, to answer the question that you raised in your introduction, the ANC is still absolutely crucial to South Africa's future. The values, the programs, the policies of the ANC are extremely relevant for now and possibly for the next decade or two. However, we have to be frank that we've gone through a period of disclosures which has demonstrated to South Africans and indeed the world that the state machinery and state resources are being used in the wrong kind of way. And so it's important to distinguish between the ANC as an organization and its values and programs on the one hand, and individuals who currently, in the view of many, don't perform their responsibilities in accordance with those values.
Mm. You talk about the need to be frank. In the spirit of frankness, the chief whip of the ANC, Jackson Mthembu, said that there should be a disciplinary process for all those MPs who voted for the motion of no confidence in Jacob Zuma. Do you agree with him?
He actually is reported, Stephen, as saying that there should be no witch hunt. That, in fact, this is a moment where we need to step back a bit as an organization and indeed as South Africa and reflect on what are the reasons for ending up where we are today. And in a self-critical way, as many documents of the ANC formally presented at ANC meetings indicate, there are things to reflect on, which is, amongst others, why do we have so much of corruption and what do we do about it? What is this grip that one family and its broader syndicate have on the structures of the state and have this remarkable ability to filter out what appear to be billions of rands of public money and public finances from state-owned enterprises and other sections of government into accounts in different parts of the world?
Yeah, well, those
and how do we finally unite the organization in line with Mr. Mandela and his generation's values?
It was a secret ballot. Nobody need tell anybody else how they voted in that no confidence vote. But how did you vote?
Well, as we said, as you say, it was a secret ballot. And like myself, there were a number of others who said that our conscience would guide us. And in addition, we had a very seminal judgment from the Constitutional Court and an equally seminal statement from the Speaker of our Parliament, which indicates that the oath that we take in Parliament is an oath to the Republic and to the Constitution, And finally, our duty lies with the people of South Africa.
I think I understand what you're saying by reading between your lines. And I also note that on July 18th, you said quite clearly, you said it is, and I'm quoting you, time for Zuma to move aside. So I think we can assume you voted for the no confidence. I just wonder how you feel when the police minister, for example, has talked about the need for lie detector tests to sort out who stayed loyal and who was disloyal to Jacob Zuma. How would you react to being faced with a lie detector test?
No, I think, in the first instance, I think the police minister is misdirecting his energy. He should take the lie detector equipment and take it to Saxon World, where the Guptas reside and others visit, and ask them to declare to the South African public and the world, how much of money have you filtered out of South Africa, and where is that money, and can we have it back, please? So that's the first issue. The second issue, which the public and indeed one of the alliance members of the ANC have raised today, that is the South African Communist Party, is why this attention given to X number of ANC MPs that might have crossed the line, so to speak, but we don't have an equal amount of attention being given to a range of corrupt activities and individuals that we see right before us, and for which there is ample evidence.
Mr. Gordhan,
well,
you keep tempting me. You keep tempting me to get directly onto the issue of corruption, and of course, you've already introduced the Guptas into this, the very successful business family who are at the centre of
allegations. And I'll soon introduce Bell Pottinger as well.
Yeah, well, we'll believe me, we're going to get to all of that. But you started by expressing the thought that the ANC remains crucial to South Africa's future, and talking about your loyalty to the ANC. So for one more moment, I'm going to stick with the atmosphere inside the party today. I happen to know, because I've been reading social media and other reports, that you've faced threats since that vote of no confidence. I think one particular person said that you ought to be, and I'm quoting something I saw on social media, necklaced, which is a reference to, of course, the violent activities that were sometimes seen during the struggle against apartheid. Others have called you out-and-out traitor and apartheid-style spy. Are you frightened right now about the sort of anger and toxic atmosphere there seems to be inside your party, some of it directed at you personally?
No. There's reason to be concerned, Stephen. There's no doubt about that. And that kind of toxicity and remarks about necklacing, which was part of our apartheid history, is totally unwelcome and inspired by a misguided sense of what is the priority in our country at this point in time. But remember as well that we have a large stock of activists in South Africa who've survived the apartheid period, who've been in solitary confinement, have survived different types of torture or maltreatment at the hands of the apartheid regime. And they, like myself, are not about to give up on the ANC and the values that we hold dear. And
Mr. Zuma will continue.
Mr.
Zuma says it is ultimately a matter of loyalty. Of course, the ANC was built on this idea of loyalty because during the struggle against apartheid, there were many people who wanted to destroy the ANC, many of them apartheid representatives themselves. So Zuma's saying to the South African public today, if you move against me, you're not just damaging me, you're damaging the entire party and letting our enemies and opponents win. How do you respond to that?
Oh, very, very simply. And that is that there's a bit of reflecting that the president needs to do about what and who is causing damage to the reputation of the ANC and is resulting in the increasing lack of trust and the trust deficit that there is between South African citizens and my own organization. And our aim is to increase the trust level among citizens, to sustain the support for the African National Congress, and to ensure that it is in a position to win the 2019 elections, whereas others might actually have a very short-term objective of participating in one or other kind of looting of the state for their personal benefit.
Yeah, let's not get ahead of ourselves. Let's not talk about 2019 elections right now. Let's talk about the 2017 ANC choice about who should lead the party after Zuma, because, of course, his term runs out at the end of the year. It seems he wants his ex-wife to take over. The other leading candidate, who's already established a campaign under the slogan CR17, is Cyril Ramaphosa. Who are you backing?
Well, firstly, there are going to be a number of candidates. Secondly, The official nomination process in the ANC commences on the 1st of September. And thirdly, in my view, Mr. Ramaphosa is eminently qualified to lead this country, and particularly its economy, which is in dire straits at the moment, to a much better future for all South Africans.
Let's look at his record. He's worth, some say, almost $500 million. He has been woven into the governing elite of business and politics since the liberation struggle. His record suggests that he's remained loyal to Zuma in a series of no-confidence votes, also in the whole dispute about how Zuma spent money on the Nkandla estate. All of these episodes, Ramaphosa, far from being a reformer and somebody prepared to speak truth to power, has been a guy who has been deeply embedded in the old ANC elite.
Well, that's one view, and I'm sure that's a view that will be part of the contest that takes place in our country. And as I said, there'll be many other contestants for the key position in the ANC as well. But like many others, he also has very strong struggle credentials, has been part of the UDF process, the creator of the National Union of Mine Workers, a key negotiator that gave us both our interim constitution and created the basis for the first democratic elections, and indeed the 1996 so-called final constitution in South Africa as well. So all of us, I imagine, have pluses and minuses. But I think for a significant number of people, there are more pluses at this point in time than perhaps some of the minuses that you point out.
All right,
the key, Stephen, is not about what you've done or not done. The key is who has a singular adherence to the principles of the ANC and is willing to take South Africa out of the morass that it finds itself in, particularly economically, as I pointed out. We need growth well above the 0.5-1% growth. We need to create jobs on a massive scale. We need investment on a massive scale. And we require not just a new visionary leadership, but an action-orientated leadership that will certainly put South Africa on a different trajectory.
But you know that there's a powerful set of voices maybe coalescing around the figure of Julius Malema and the economic freedom fighters who say that the problem with people like Ramaphosa, and I dare say, frankly, people like you too, is that you don't have a radical vision and that in the end you're still in the pockets of the old elites. In fact, Malema says Cyril Ramaphosa shouldn't really call himself a black South African. He should simply say he's non-white because he's basically still in the pocket of the old elites.
Well, you know, our constitution allows freedom of speech and in this case the freedom of polemic as well. So I think we must treat that as polemic on the part of Mr. Malema, who himself is a political contestant for power. If we don't have the right leadership, we don't actually implement the policies that we have, then like in any other democratic situation, we will lose the elections in 2019.
Will you continue your campaign to see Jacob Zuma removed from office after 2017? Well, he'll no longer be the leader of the ANC, but he will still be president of the nation. He could and will, it seems, be determined to see his office through to the end of 2018. But will you be advocating his removal?
Well, you know, that'll be the responsibility of the new leadership that will be elected in December 2017.
Yeah, I'm just asking you.
That leadership,
your take.
I might not even be part of that. So it's not for me. And I haven't been campaigning. I've just merely been part of a process and to a large extent been a victim of very ill-advised decisions made in respect of governance in this country, which has resulted in downgrades, lack of confidence, drop in confidence and drop in investment. And what we want to see, as I've said repeatedly, is to turn that narrative and situation around so that we have a different kind of trajectory into the future. So
all right.
The ANC is elected, they will decide what the answer to your question is.
All right. Well, clearly you're not going to give me a direct answer right now, so let's move on. Let's talk about you and these issues of governance that you've already mentioned in this interview, and you've made a point of already mentioning the Gupta family, who stand at the centre of this set of allegations about quote-unquote state capture, the degree to which they've exercised power and influence at the very heart of government. Allegations, it should be said, that they've consistently denied, but you clearly believe them to be true. Do you believe you were fired by Jacob Zuma, in particular the second firing, from the finance ministry because of influence being exercised by business interests who wanted you out?
Well, in the first term, Stephen, I left at the end of the five-year term. In the second instance, I did get fired, as you say. And there's a strong belief that there's a link to the kind of interests and objectives that this particular family and those who work with it had in South Africa, including making sure that we interfere with the banking system and their rights in respect of having particular clients or not having clients, interfering with a decision possibly to be made, which would have entitled them to buy a bank and then carry on with whatever it is that they want to actually carry on. And thirdly, in respect of the kind of activities that were going on in the state-owned enterprises, institutions like Eskom and Transnet, all of which is now coming to the surface.
Yeah, this is important. You've heard, I'm sure, in a recent interview, actually, on the BBC, Atul Gupta completely rejected the raft of allegations connected to the release of thousands of leaked emails. He said the emails weren't authentic. He denied some of those key, very dramatic allegations about, for example, $40 million allegedly being offered to the deputy finance minister, Mr. Jonas, if he would take charge of the finance ministry on the understanding that he would do the Gupta's bidding. Atul Gupta said that was simply not true. There is a fundamental question mark facing all of South Africans. Should they believe this web of allegations of corruption going to the very top of government? Your message seems to be yes, they should.
Is there any reason why we should believe anything that that a Gupta family member has to say? I can affirm to you in categorical terms that the Deputy Minister of South Africa was offered 600 million rands as a bribe in order to take the position of Finance Minister later that year in 2015, which he rejected. And as a consequence, he was dismissed, as I was, towards the end of March this year. And secondly, a number of others who are implicated and mentioned in the emails that you refer to have not contested the truth. In fact, have provided one or other kind of explanation, either to vindicate themselves or to extricate themselves.
Are you ready to see the Guptas
from the
court?
Allegations
Mr.
in
Gordon,
the emails?
Are you ready to see the Guptas in court if they choose to pursue you, because of course they deny all of the allegations that you've just mentioned. Are you ready for that, if necessary?
No, it's not my job. It's the job of the law enforcement entities in this country to intervene where there is corruption in relation to the public sector and private sector interactions, use these emails and whatever other information that is in the public domain at this point in time to enforce the laws of this country, to ensure that anybody that does business here should be law-abiding. And a question that should concern the British public as well is the involvement of a PR company called Bell Pottinger in our affairs in South Africa, in creating racial tensions in this country, in the course of actually serving the financial interests or whatever other interests there are of this particular family.
We've talked a lot about the ANC. Of course, you've been a long-time member, your loyalty to it. But in the end, what's more important to you? Getting to the bottom, to the truth of all of these allegations about the Guptas and state capture, or the health of the ANC? Because if the investigation ultimately means that people at the top of the ANC get very badly damaged, there might be a choice you have to make. Which is your priority, getting to the truth or protecting the ANC?
No, they're related, because getting to the truth will help to protect the ANC. And as you know, the Constitutional Court in South Africa has said that, as has the previous public protector, that a commission of inquiry needs to be appointed.
Yeah, but it hasn't
there's
been.
Agreement in the
we
ANC.
We haven't got the
there's agreement in the ANC.
Yeah, we haven't got the independent.
No, there's agreement in
the
ANC that there's agreement in the ANC that a commission of that nature, headed by a respected judge, needs to be put in place so all of these allegations can be tested and evidence provided. And the only question is, when will that actually be done? And if the allegations are proven to be correct, and if we can extricate this cancer of extreme corruption in our system, the ANC would be alive, it will be well, it will be aligned with the aspirations of South African citizens, and ensure that our economy and society moves in the right kind of direction.
All right. You mentioned Bell Pottinger. Just very quickly on that, this big PR firm based in London, but which is working, it seems, with the Guptas, has acknowledged that it regrets some things that it did, pushing the Guptas' case in South Africa. But one thing that it seems they decided would be helpful to the Guptas was to undertake this sort of narrative, which says, according to the Guptas, that the problem isn't the way they've operated. The problem in South Africa today is still the dominance of what's called, quote, white monopoly capital. And to a certain extent, they've got a point, haven't they? Because if one looks at the inequalities in South Africa today, who really holds the wealth? Well, disproportionately, it is still the white people. Who owns the land? It's still disproportionately the white people. So there is a problem which people like you, who've been in power for a long time in South Africa, have signally failed to address.
Not quite true. I mean, there's been... Remember that what we have in South Africa, and it's something that we need to constantly remind ourselves, is a constitutional arrangement that came out of a political settlement. This wasn't a conquest situation where any one side conquered the other and at will was able to reshape both the politics and the economy of the society. Secondly, we might also want to remember that as part of ensuring stability, Mr. Mandela and his colleagues in that early 1990s period, leading up to the 1994 elections, in fact, did a couple of things. Firstly, they agreed to a government of national unity. Secondly, they agreed that a finance minister of the previous apartheid era will continue for a short while in order to reassure the markets that nothing untoward would actually happen. So stabilizing the situation in South Africa economically was quite important for the politics to actually take root as well. Thirdly, there's been any amount of transformation that has taken place, but fourthly, has it been adequate? Has it eradicated 300 years of colonial legacy? Definitely not. So there's a lot of hard work to do, a lot of reconstructing to do, but what is happening currently in terms of the pilfering of state finances and the kind of undermining of state institutions is delaying that project.
Yes or no, we have to end like this. You talk a lot about reconstructing and reforming South Africa. It may be the best way to do that would be for people like you to leave the ANC and join a different political movement. Will you ever leave the ANC?
After 40 years of contribution to the struggle here in South Africa and to the African National Congress, not at this stage. And remember, Stephen, that the ANC as an organization and as a part of our history is very close to the hearts of majority of South Africans. Some might be disappointed with what we've seen recently, but we've got to respect that it has massive support on the ground. If we get it right in December, then that support will return to the ANC, and we will continue to transform South Africa in the right kind of way.
We have to end there, but I must thank you very much, Pravin Gordhan, for being on Hard Talk.
Thank you for having me.
That was an edition of Hard Talk presented by me, Stephen Sacker. For details of our complete range of podcasts and our terms of use, go to bbcworldservice.com/podcasts.